We'll start the show today with a new film set in 2004 Iraq, just as the insurgency was starting to heat up. The movie is called The Hurt Locker, and it follows an army bomb squad as they defuse IEDs all over Baghdad. Jeremy Renner plays Sergeant William James.
You the guy in the flaming car, Sergeant James?
Afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. You're a wild man, you know that?
Yes,
sir. He's a wild man, you know that? Why don't you shake your hand?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. How many bombs have you disarmed?
I'm not quite sure, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes.
I asked your question.
873.
873. 873.
Hurt Locker was written by Mark Boll, who, as a journalist, was embedded with U.S. soldiers in the early days of the war. But the film in general, the handheld cameras, the visceral combat sequences, are all the work of director Kathryn Bigelow. Bigelow has been making intense, ambitious action films for more than 20 years, from the surfer heist movie Point Break to the dystopian thriller Strange Days. The Hurt Locker has been getting ecstatic reviews, deservedly, and I am very pleased to welcome Kathryn Bigelow to Studio 360.
Well, thank you very much.
So, The Hurt Locker, how come that title, which every time I tell people I saw and love this movie, I have to explain what I've just said?
It's a slang term that Mark heard on his embed in Baghdad with the bomb squad that implies a extremely dangerous place, a painful place. In other words, if this bomb goes off, we'll all be in the Hurt Locker. On the other hand, to identify it or to define it in the film might have kind of narrowed its sort of more interpretive and ambiguous nature, which we both felt was intriguing.
Well, which you don't do. And it's among the many kind of acts of great restraint in this film. Was that a big virtue to you?
Well, I think certainly for a movie like this, I mean, these men have, in my opinion, the most dangerous job in the world. So it is inherently extraordinarily dramatic. And there was no need to kind of gloss it up or trump it up. I mean, it really is a matter of watching these guys do what they do and do what they do best. And it's nerve-wracking. You know, just when Mark came back from Baghdad telling these stories about, you know, every single day, they go out hunting down these suspicious wires sticking up out of a rubble pile, never knowing what they're going to face.
And, of course, as we read in the papers these days, as IEDs increase by tenfold or a hundredfold in Afghanistan, these guys still have work.
Yeah. In fact, just yesterday there was another bomb tech in Afghanistan who was killed, and probably a week earlier another one. And, you know, I think that's really sobering.
A lot of movies set in the Middle East are filmed in Morocco all the way across the top of Africa, which is presumably safer and easier place to film. You shot in Jordan, sort of almost next door to the, well, actually next door to Iraq. Why did you make that choice?
Well, wanted to be as close to the war zone as we possibly could.
Because that's so fun?
Actually, Barry and I at one point wanted to, we were so close to the border, Barry Ackroyd, the cinematographer, wanted to shoot some photography in Iraq, but their security detail said they couldn't guarantee our safety because of snipers. So we stayed in Jordan. And the great bonus that neither of us anticipated were the Iraqi refugees, which were probably upwards of about 750,000 at the time when we were shooting. And so I immediately incorporated them into all the background extras and the speaking parts, many of whom were actually actors in Baghdad. So that was, he probably thought they would never act again. If you remember the sequence in the desert, two of them were actually POWs, had been, in Baghdad. And they were now playing POWs in this movie. So,
so the prisoners that Ralph Fiennes and his band were actually POWs?
Yes.
Good God. This is going to seem like a stupid question, I suppose, but wasn't it really hot?
Well, not as hot as Kuwait. We scouted Kuwait prior to going to Jordan, and that was insane. The temperatures at the time we were there was about 135 degrees. In Jordan, it was about, you know, it was a mild, maybe 115, 120. So,
And your main character has this big, what must be a hellish bomb suit on.
That was a real bomb suit made of Kevlar and ceramic plates, weighs approximately 100 pounds. And then you add to that the helmet, which limits your oxygen. That was fairly harrowing in and of itself.
What's he doing?
I don't know. What are you doing? There's enough bagging there to send us all to Jesus. I'm going to die. I want to die comfortable.
Most of the leads in this film are not very well known, but you have three very well-known actors in very brief, small roles, Guy Pearce and David Morse and Ralph Fiennes. How did that happen?
So my thinking was, if it's a very well-known face in your lead role, you're going to anticipate, well, he can't die, he's a hero, he can't die till
the
end. You know, it's or not die at all.
Yeah.
And so when you take that out of the equation, and the playing field is anything can happen, which in fact is what it's like in Baghdad. That was very important.
Watching the movie, I was sometimes reminded of your film Strange Days, the science fiction thriller from 1995. In its camera work, among other things, it also takes place in a kind of war zone, although in Los Angeles, and it also starred Ralph Fiennes, who plays Lanny Nero, who's an ex-cop selling a sort of futuristic virtual reality device to thrill seekers and junkies. I want to play a clip of Ralph Fiennes in that film describing the experience.
Now listen, I want you to know what we're talking about here, okay? This is not like TV, only better. This is life. It's a piece of somebody's life. It's pure and uncut. It's straight from the cerebral cortex. I mean, you're there. You're doing it. You're seeing it. You're hearing it. You're feeling it.
What kind of things, exactly?
It's about the stuff that you can't have, right? The forbidden fruit, Like running into a liquor store with a .357 Magnum in your hand, feeling the adrenaline pumping through your veins, huh?
So that character is selling this sort of addictive thrill, which is to some degree what The Hurt Locker is about as well, yeah?
You know, I don't think you can do a movie today about this conflict or any conflict that Americans are involved with without addressing the fact that it's an all-volunteer military.
Meaning that they've chosen to go do this for better, for whatever combination of reasons.
Exactly. Like these individuals, these members of the EOD, who arguably have the most dangerous job in the world, are there by choice. And yet, what is the personal price that they're paying?
What do we have here?
They're, bomb parts, signatures.
Yeah, I see that, but what are they doing under your bed?
Well, this one, y'all, is from our first call together. This box is full of stuff that almost killed me.
What about this one? Where's this one from, Will?
It's my wedding ring. Like I said, stuff that almost killed me.
There are some incredibly beautiful brief shots of explosions in this film. Does that come from your sort of artist past? You were a painter and you studied art as a young person.
I did. And, it's a real challenge not to get, for me anyway, as a filmmaker, not to be too seduced by the visual.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very seductive surface, but to go past that surface and, of course, begin to mine the substance.
How did you go from being a young painter in New York City to being this director of action movies?
How did it happen? I think that I was in the art world. I was working actually as a conceptual artist with a group of artists. Oh, this is going to sound so erudite. But anyway, trying to not have culture be so commodified.
This is in the 1970s.
This is in the 70s, exactly. And then I was looking at why film is so captivating. In other words, how do you break that fourth wall? And so it kind of found, I always sort of think of it as it found me. I didn't even know it was called directing, what I was doing. I was just exploring an idea, but I was using film as the medium for that exploration.
But was it the interest in telling longer stories that attracted you, or the interest in having millions of people rather than thousands or hundreds of people see it?
Well, there you have it. See, I was also, I knew Andy Warhol a bit at the time, and I don't say that as a, to drop names. I don't mean it that way. But
yeah.
The thing that's so was so extraordinary about him and his work is it was incredibly intellectual work that was very populist simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And that was a paradigm shift for me. You know, that was like, wait a minute, you can, you know, it's a Brillo box in a very beautiful art gallery, mm-hmm. yet it was an incredible political statement. This idea of something being accessible, you could just fall in, you know, fall out of the street into a theater, watch something, and have it wash over you, and then you leave the theater and suddenly you're thinking about something. That, to me, that's as good as it gets.
Catherine Bigelow, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Kurt. I appreciate it.
Catherine Bigelow is the director of The Hurt Locker, which is in theaters now. Later this hour, things get a little tense at a summer potluck.
I had 5 children to take care of, and I had to work full-time as a silversmith.
And you had to run around and go to meetings.
I was never home.
You guys with Samuel Adams.
Sons of Liberty, madam.
Well, don't call me madam.
Some historical reenactors let their hair down. That's ahead in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC. Stay with us.